Good evening. Welcome to the Salieri Report. Today is October 26, 2017. This is Catherine Austin Fitz. Tonight is the third quarter equity overview. It's the third part of the third quarter wrap-up, and I'm happy you could join me this evening. I've been on what I would call an excellent people trip. I've been hanging out with some really excellent people. I started off by flying to Washington, and spent several days in Washington. I was there to meet Dr. Mark Skidmore in person, who is absolutely fantastic. And if you haven't listened to my interview with him or read his report about the missing money, I recommend it. I also had the opportunity to have breakfast with Congressman Kucinich. I'm a great fan of his. He was one of the people, in addition to Congresswoman McKinney, who really made an effort to bring transparency to the missing money problem. And I had an opportunity to talk with him when I was out at the Nexus conference. We were on a panel together. Washington is literally rolling in dough. The national security state just keeps sucking up more money. And as you look around and watch what's going on, you think, can you imagine what's going to happen if the spigot ever gets shut down? Then I came to New York. I took a trip from New York to go see Bill Binney in Baltimore. And he briefed me on the four lawsuits that are now underway across the country to try and enforce the Constitution vis-a-vis the NSA. And I've asked the attorneys who wrote the special Salieri report on Bitcoin taxes if they would follow up with a special report on those four lawsuits. So I'm hoping to bring that to you before the end of the year. In New York, I've had, and I'm still in New York, I've had an incredible time. I had the opportunity to see one subscriber. There are many more I would have liked to have seen, but I just didn't have time on this trip, and a meeting with several business colleagues, and so that's been very productive. But I had a chance to see Helen Chapman, the attorney who wrote the book J.P. Madoff, who's one of the lead attorneys representing Madoff victims, and got a deep dive briefing on more corruption of what's going on in the banking system. You know, one of the greatest blessings right now is really brilliant and very capable ethical attorneys who really believe in the law, and certainly Helen qualifies, and it's always inspiring to be around. And then we had opportunity today to have lunch, Helen and I, with Lynn Albrecht, who is Russ Albrecht's mother and running the website freeross.org. And I would encourage you, I recommended in Let's Go to the Movies that everyone watch the documentary about that situation. I believe the name was Deep Capture, and it's about the Silk Road website and prosecution. And it's very chilling for me to watch it because basically the playbook that they used to frame Russ Ulbricht was the one they tried to use to frame me. And so watching it brings back the memories of what it's like to be in the crosshairs of a malicious prosecution where you have to obey the law and they don't. I had the opportunity to go to Tales of Hoffman at the Metropolitan Opera. It was absolutely sublime. And tomorrow night, I'm headed back to see La Boheme. So this has been an opera week. And the feeling you get from listening to excellent singers and being with excellent freedom fighters and excellent people is, it's just been a very inspiring trip. Equity overview. There are two links in your subscriber links. One is to the web presentation for the third quarter wrap-up. And of course, I'll be referring to the financial markets section. And we also have an update on the space companies in that section, which I'll talk about. And then the second link is to Rambus's Chartology, which is just absolutely, if you love to look at charts as much as I do, it's absolutely sublime. Rambus outdoes himself every quarter, but he really did outdid himself this quarter. I told him he was the Vivaldi of technical analysis, or Mozart. He could take his pick. I started the financial market section on the web presentation with a quote from a very, very good article called Cheap Logic by Ben Hunt. And I want to read it to you. I'm going to read the full one. Active central bank narrative construction in the service of their policy goals is a permanent change in our market dynamics. The introduction of such a powerful new weapon in the Fed's policy arsenal can no more be removed than mustard gas or tanks could be removed from national arsenals after World War I. Market prices may be mean reverting, but innovation in the service of social control never is. What did the missionaries get out of this? What's our equivalent of wool and mutton? It's low volatility. It's the transformation of capital markets into a political utility, which is just about the greatest gift that the status quo political interests can imagine. When Donald Trump and Steve Mnuchin talk about the stock market being their report card, they're just saying out loud what every other administration has known for years. Forget about markets. Our entire political system relies on stocks going up. If stocks don't go up, our public pension funds and social insurance programs are busted, driving our current levels of wealth inequality from ridiculously unbalanced to Louis XVI unbalanced. If stocks don't go up, we don't have new collateral for our new debt. And if we can't keep borrowing and borrowing to fuel today's consumption with tomorrow's growth, well, that's no fun now, is it? The flip side to all of this is, of course, that so long as stocks do go up, nothing big is ever going to change. You say you want a revolution, you're a Make America Great Again guy, and you want someone to drain the swamp. You're a Bernie bro, and you want the rich to pay their fair share. Well, good luck with any of that so long as stocks go up. It's a very stable political equilibrium we have today, full of Sturm und Drang to provide a bit of amusement and distraction, but very stable for the haves. So with that very compelling insight about the relationship between the Fed printing financial methadone and stocks going steadily up despite all the news that is fit and unfit to print, there we have it. The U.S. dollar index, and I'm going to talk in terms of the, I'm going to go through the web presentation now, so you might want to click over to that and follow along as I do this. The U.S. dollar index was down as of the end of the third quarter. It started to turn up since, but it was down 9.75. It's held within that channel. It did not break the 92 line. 92 line is a very important technical line. If you look at Rambus's U.S. dollar charts, he has a whole currency section. He shows that channel between 92 and 104, and we've had a brief inflection above the 104 and a brief sort of drop below 92 during 2017, but it hasn't broken the line. Anyway, tax reform, I think, is going to be very supportive of a rising dollar. And it also means the possibility of a bear trap globally in places that have borrowed significant amounts of dollars. Because whether it's the change in corporate repatriation or the change in the state tax or various changes in tax rates, I think you're going to see a giant sucking sound of money out of various places around the world and into the United States. So strong dollar and a potentially big swing on many markets. Fixed income has gotten a much better performance this year than I expected. The bond aggregate was up 3.12% as of the end of September, junk up 6.32%, the long treasury up 6.75%, and the intermediate treasury up 2.85%. Very respectable performance given the concerns about interest rates and credit quality. I'm not particularly concerned about interest rates rising significantly. I don't think it's going to happen. But certainly the Fed backed off on several occasions from bumping it. We'll see what they do at the next meeting. But so bonds have held reasonably well. But given all the credit issues in the fixed income markets, the debt growth model is over, and we just don't expect much of a performance going forward. Now, we get into a real spiral down, and that could change. It could be reasonably good for bonds. So I would not say it's a certainty that we're in a bad market for bonds in all cases. Equities, the S&P at the end of the third quarter was up 13.99%. Large caps were in the lead, up 14.26%. Medium caps up 11.98 and small caps up 10.52. So the small caps lagging. Defense was one of the strongest sectors, up 27.8%. That reflects massive U.S. budget increases, with the administration asking for a big increase, and then McCain and the Senate significantly increasing that. Industrials has been a very strong sector, in part reflecting the sort of insourcing proposed. Home construction up 33%, although we see a real bifurcation between markets in places which are sort of strong for global 3.0 versus 2.0. I continue to believe that space is going to be one of the real star performers. We'll talk about that later. And of course, I think a lot of what we're watching is channeling quantitative easing inflation into the market, into the equity markets and hard assets. The reality is a lot of money's got to get out of the fixed income market and is looking for a place to go. Germany and the European ETF, VGK, both up 24% at the end of the third quarter. China doing better than anybody. You've got small caps up 32.25% and large caps up 27.44%. The India ETF PIN up 24.18%. So India also doing well and slightly, well, basically even with Europe. As I've been saying for years, the U.S. market is shot way ahead of Europe and the emerging markets, and they're catching up. Again, a strong dollar could reverse that. If we get money pouring back in, you could see more money into the U.S. equity markets. Oil still struggling in the doghouse at the end of the third quarter at 15.01% down. Gold was up 10.92%, and the silver ETF up 4.17%. That is an absolutely remarkable performance given the giant sucking sound of money out of precious metals into Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies. To give you a sense of the extent of the sucking sound, Bitcoin started the year at, 12/31, we ended at 950, and now the price, it's topped 6,000, it's backed off, it's about 5,950. When we did the first Bitcoin Solera report on May 3rd, 2017, the commentary published on May 3rd, the total market capitalization for the entire cryptocurrency market was $35 billion, which was approximately one-third of the market capitalization of Starbucks. And it's funny, from the 5 days after we recorded the Bitcoin conversation to when we published the commentary, the cryptocurrency market went from $30 to $35 billion, which in percentage terms is over 10%. It was pretty remarkable. Anyway, if it was 30 to 35 billion, then today the cryptocurrency market is 173 billion, of which Bitcoin is 100 billion. That's a major growth. We're only now in the, we're still 2 months away from the end of the year. So as I said, the price has gone up more than five times from 950 to 5,960. Now, to give you a sense, if the cryptocurrency market is 173 billion, all outstanding gold is 8 trillion, and of course, silver's more. So, Bitcoin is still tiny compared to the gold market, but if you look at the returns it's getting, we're seeing lots of signals from across the market that money is shifting out of precious metals into Bitcoin, and clearly incremental money that would be going into gold is going into Bitcoin. So, to me, this is it's a wonderful thing for the central banks because they're buyers, and a lot of the smart money is buying, and this keeps a lot of the stupid money, sort of rolling with the crypto. Let's invent the cryptocurrency pump and away from gold. And in one sense, that argues that it's a smart time to buy gold. The Baltic Dry Index, good news for the global market, is up 45%. I thought that was interesting, more than I would have expected. So let me turn and look. I'll make a few comments on what's ahead in the Rambus piece. As I said, this is a remarkable piece from Rambus. I strongly recommend it. Now, I've had one wonderful subscriber adamantly insist that I provide information about how to use technical analysis. If you look at what it takes to do to really help you understand technical analysis, I would strongly, you know, recommend you get a hold of Technical Analysis for Dummies. You know, the Four Dummies series has a really good introduction on technical analysis. There's great introduction at Stock Charts, which is one of the websites I use to make the charts that we publish weekly at the Solari Report. They're great. You know, one way to understand it is to look at the definitions all on Wikipedia, which I think are pretty good, or Investopedia. So there's a lot of great information to help you understand what the different sort of technical indicators are on a chart, whether it's the moving averages or the RSI. For me, a chart gives a way of compressing a tremendous amount of information into an easy read graphic form. I can see the history of the prices. I can see the patterns of the prices. I can see volume and momentum and compare it to see to what I know is going on in the fundamentals and the comparisons. It's interesting. One of the things Rambus is doing more and more is talking about how rigged the markets are and the extent to which the manipulations are happening. He sees it too, which is not the usual conversation you get from technical people who do technical analysis. But Rambus adds commentary, which I think is very helpful to follow along. But I would suggest if you want technical analysis to go to Investopedia and Wikipedia, read the definitions, and get yourself a copy of one of the Four Dummies book on technical analysis. It'll give you a good introduction and certainly a much better one than I feel comfortable doing. The U.S. dollar index is a very important chart. It's one of the ones I watch the closest. At this point, the dollar is very dependent on military, and that includes space. As I said, tax reform will be strong from the dollar, but it could put countries around the world who've got very heavy dollar borrowings in a bear trap. I've talked about that for the last 2 years. It hasn't happened. But if you look at the charts, Rambus really does show you why the dollar is stronger than you might think. And he underscores the importance of this 92 to 104 channel that we've been trading back and forth in. I always recommend to people, if you want to understand the challenges with the dollar, to read the article that The Economist had. They did a big spread on the dollar a few years ago. It was called Dangerous but Dominant. And the reality is, if you look at how the financial markets work globally, the dollar is very dominant in terms of liquidity and trading within the financial system globally. The market share is dropping. But you have, with the debt growth model, you've got a lot of countries around the world who have borrowed tremendous amounts of money in dollars, and that means they owe dollars, and that creates a demand for dollars. But the dollar has a lot of strength behind it, particularly if the military continues to be successful. This is why what happened with the rammings of the Navy ship was so dangerous and of great concern to Dr. Farrell and I. We talk about it in News Trends and Stories. This puts a lot of weight on Mattis, Secretary of Defense, and Kelly, Chief of Staff, but with a military background, and Tillerson over at State, because Congress is now authorizing huge military increases to restore the military, which the sort of standard line military, I think, could use a lot of rejuvenating if what you want is performance. And so trying to rebuild a performance-oriented organization is more than a huge challenge. A lot of that money has gone to basically prop up the stock market and buy contractors. So let's see if that just continues to happen. The industrials reflect that push to both rebuild the military and rebuild industrial capacity in the U.S., not be dependent on Asia or outsourcing, which creates a lot of political risks. All of this puts a heavy dependence on space, because whether you're trying to be a unipolar empire or you're trying to be successful as Fortress America in a multipolar world, you need high performance in space. And that means satellites, and unfortunately, I'm assuming from everything we're watching, it means space weaponry. Notice we put up on the website last week, I think it was last week's very big space exercises, the US leading 20 plus countries in space exercises finished. It was very interesting. Take a look at it. Anyway, Washington is on a pork treadmill, and it's a major job to change to performance. And that's one of the real killers on the dollar is your the more you depend on pork, the more the productivity and the performance goes down. So getting out of that trap is going to be a problem. The annual wrap-up is going to be on pension funds, but the first quarter wrap-up is going to be on the space-based economy. Because every week I work on it, I just focus more and more on how important space is going to be in a whole variety of ways. And I think it's very important that that we all understand that and see that. The debt growth model, as I said, is over, and what that means is interest rates are now nuclear weapons in the hand of bankers. You now have governments over a barrel with debt, tremendous amounts of debt, and you combine that with the related derivatives, and all you need is a tiny bump in interest rates to basically hiccup the world. So, it's a major ball and chain that the bankers now have on everybody. So here's the question: what is going to keep equities rolling? I keep talking about the great Fortune 500 chart that I've tried to get permission from Fortune to publish it, but unfortunately I haven't received it yet. I showed it in my presentation, so you can see it in the Nexus presentation. There's a video that we posted on the blog. It's also up at YouTube. And what it shows is from 1955 to 1995, Fortune 500 revenues tracked along with the GNP, and suddenly they exploded and grew much faster than the GNP. I think that reflects several things. One is globalization, but two is the extraordinary explosion of government debt and missing money from the US government. And starting that last year, if you look sort of at the end of 2016, the explosion of revenues had been so great that from 55 to the end of 2016, the Fortune 500 revenues had grown more than double for the whole period what the GNP had done. So you hear this giant sucking sound centralizing revenues into the stock market. And I think, and then you start to see it fall, and there's a seesawing between 2016 and 2017. Part of the problem, as we've discussed earlier, is that multinationals are experiencing far more local competition all around the world, and they're fighting falling margins globally. And so part of that is the desire to pull back and earn more deeper in their markets. But of course, that keeps coming back to government money. That's one of my concerns on the missing money. My concern is that that money was part of propping it up. It's one of the reasons I think Congress was so generous with the defense appropriation is trying to plug that gap. And in fact, so the pressure is great for tax reform for this reason. You're trying to balance off that seesaw. And we just saw this week a budget pass that would allow tax reform with a simple majority to pass. If you have to go to a quorum, then you have real political problems getting it done. And I think one of the reasons that Obamacare, that such an effort was made to get Obamacare taken care of, was to make the budget go and go in a way that you could then get tax reform. And indeed, we saw Secretary Mnuchin, Treasury Secretary Mnuchin, stating earlier this month, if we don't get tax reform, equities could correct. So let's turn to equities. Rambis does a remarkable job both in the equity section, but then he returns to equities in the precious metal section in his latest update. So make sure you, if you're interested in equities only, you take a look at both the equity section and the precious metal section as well. But he makes the bull case very well, and his charts clearly support it. He's been saying this for years now, and taking a lot of heat from the gold bugs accordingly. I wanted to read you two excerpts because I think they're very important to understand. Our charts have chronicled the market indices relentlessly powering higher. This is Rambus talking. It's a runaway freight train, unstoppable. One prominent newsletter writer from a contrarian newsletter group has even published a guide on how to play what he calls the melt-up market. I often hear people wonder what can possibly stop this market. It acts impervious to any threat or bad news. Let's take a look at some measures of vertical extension which the markets have now reached. Frank Barbera recently published a few market duration statistics that are simply mind-boggling. The Dow Jones Industrial Average has been around for 120 years, and we have accurate statistics over that time frame. We are now in the longest interval without a 5% correction in history by a long shot. We have gone 360 days since a 5% correction. This is off the charts, since the second longest interval in the last 120 years comes in at 265 days back in 1964. The number three and number four longest were 229 and 220. The S&P 500 has similar statistics. However, it has not been tracked as long as the Dow. Similarly, the Dow's 100-day moving average has been in an upward configuration for 333 days. There have been only two other times in history where it even exceeded 250. It typically takes 18 trading days to turn the moving averages down, so as a minimum, 350 seems in the bag. Today's extreme vertical run is simply extraordinary, since world markets are driven by a sea of liquidity due to quantitative easing programs. Hold on. It has characteristics of an engineered outcome. Now, this is Rambus talking about rigging. It's great. It reminds me of what happens when the U.S. Forest Service does not allow any fires to burn. It prevents them for extended periods, but ultimately results in a conflagration later on. After the dot-com bubble burst, Fed emergency measures resulted in the housing bubble, and after the 2008 financial crisis, emergency money printing. Well, actually, the housing, this is my note, housing bubble was engineered starting 1994, so they were working on it for a while. Emergency money printing, QE, has led us to where we are today, the everything bubble. This is not a rant against Fed policies. I'm simply chronicling the reality of markets today in an attempt to develop a strategy going forward. The two previous bubbles, although large, were essentially sideshow bubbles. However, today's bubble is a money bubble which goes to the heart of money and credit. Once it deflates, the Fed may not be able to reflate it, since they will not be able to increase non-productive credit. It is with this knowledge that we review the dynamics of the post-bubble contraction and develop a strategy going forward. So exactly the challenge. How do you, market commentators constantly say you can't fight the Fed. The question is, what's the Fed's plan when this bubble bursts? Now, it's interesting. One of the things that is soaking up a great deal of liquidity without turning on inflation of hard assets or real things, of course, is cryptocurrencies and Bitcoins, which is why I think they've been allowed to just run. You see the head of the president of the ECB saying, Mario Draghi saying, it's too early to regulate them, which means let's just let them run and soak up as much as they possibly. There's more in Rambus's description, and I would encourage you to read it. The reality is the market is high, but it has capacity to go higher. It's seriously overbought right now. And again, big question is, will we get tax reform? Because that could basically create the floor that it needs to even go higher. But I do think there is a very serious system-wide commitment to engineering a crash-up scenario, with equities rising higher as opposed to debt breaking down and crashing down. So I always liken the planet to a house that's overvalued, or the mortgage is now worth more than the house, and you have two solutions. You can mark down the mortgage, or you can do something that causes the equity to go up. And that's the crash up scenario. Part of it is simply channeling all the quantitative easing. And it's one of the reasons I think that control technology is so important. It's one of the reasons I wanted to discuss our theme, Control 101, which we'll present next week. So bottom line, tax reform is going to send it higher is what I believe. We've added updated space company lists to the financial market section. It's revised slightly from the second quarter wrap-up. I continue to add and fine-tune those lists. As I said, the annual wrap-up will be on pension funds, but the first quarter in 2018 will be on the space-based economy. Morgan Stanley has a new report out on space, estimating that the space industry, which is worth approximately $350 billion today, will grow into an economy worth more than $1.1 trillion by 2040. So they're projecting a 300% increase. Actually, I believe the covert side of the space economy is much greater than that $350 billion. So if the truth be known, the actual number is bigger, and I think the growth will also be bigger. But 300% is pretty significant on its own. One of the challenges of being in the equity markets now is we're watching a bifurcation where global 3.0 is shooting up and global 2.0 is dropping down. And so you have to be very careful about exactly who you're in and whether or not they're going to be successful as we go through this change. Another example that happened this week, I talked a lot about this using Amazon as an example. When Harry Blaser and I discussed the Amazon Whole Foods deal, we saw the grocery stocks trade down on the announcement of the Amazon deal with Whole Foods by more than Amazon went up. So there was a net drop in market capitalization across the board. And of course, that's the risk that we get that kind of deflation as the technology and competition really bring down the margins across industries. So it's interesting, if you look at the Treasury report on financial regulation, it was very focused on the shrinking float of the number of companies in the U.S. markets and the importance of getting growth there. And I think part of that is they appreciate the deflation that is at work here. Here's the big challenge. The big challenge is that no matter how much we try and crash up the markets with government money, including covert government money or organized crime or lower taxes, the big challenge is over at the Department of Justice. We really are developing a significant breakdown in the rule of law in this country, including malicious prosecution. We had a great Salir report early this year with Howard Root, founder and president of a CEO of a publicly traded company. And he sold his company. He said, you know, I just can't lead a company with this kind of legal enforcement going on. A recent survey from Chapman University showed number one concern of American people, 79%, is government official corruption. And so you can't have a financial market and economy, certainly not a healthy and innovative one, without the rule of law. I could say that, you know, it's funny because if you look at China, the Chinese entrepreneurs are dealing with the same issue. I was reminded of, again, we keep getting new news about the Uranium One deal between the Clintons and the Clinton Foundation and the Russians, which now is front headlines on both the independent media and the corporate media. But I was reminded today that the Bundy Ranch just happened to be sitting on some of the deposits that were important for the Uranium One deal. And it's just a reminder of how much is now coming out that's just going to exacerbate people's anger about the corruption. So let's talk about what this all means to your portfolio strategy. U.S. dollar, watch the inflection points. I'm assuming it's going to continue to trade in the channel, but if we do get tax reform, in theory, we could break to the upside. I don't expect it, but it's possible. And of course, the danger is that the dollar is just too over-dependent on military. Even Secretary Mattis of Secretary of Defense has warned that that's a problem and it's not healthy. The other thing is we have Israel and the neocons hanging around, who would be happy to destroy the U.S. for their own purposes. And they are a huge taxation on the system and a real problem. Precious metals, make sure you have your core position. If you look at the possibilities for a stronger dollar, which is going to be bad for precious metals, I'm still not recommending precious metals as an investment, but I think it is a very attractive time, especially if you get a strong dollar and a lower price, to make sure you've accumulated your core. The one exception to that is the Bitcoin has the premiums much lower on coins and physical precious metals. And in that sense, it makes it an attractive time to accumulate, particularly if you're working with dealers where you accumulate a little bit at a time. And I assure you, I think whether the price is up or down, the central banks are going to keep buying. So as they see opportunities to buy, you can too. But again, I think you definitely want to have your core, hold your core. But, you know, the fourth quarter doesn't look like it's going to be attractive for precious metals, particularly if we get tax reform. Equities, we're clearly in a bull. Right now, the market is very overbought. So it's hard to imagine that you would want to be buying at the time. But the real divide is really the growth, the 3.0 growth versus the 2.0 guys who are not going to be making it. So be very careful about that bifurcation. If you don't want to run the risk of a correction, which we have to get eventually, the way to handle that is hedging. I'd much rather be hedged and stay in the market than leave the market because I was concerned about drops. So hedging is the way you deal with that, not exiting. But I think there's a lot of good companies in the market who are not involved in the corruption and are really trying to perform in a system despite that it's corrupt. Every asset class has the same problem in terms of dealing with aspects of the total system which are corrupt. So again, equities market is in a bull, and if I were you, I'd have an allocation in equities that's either focused on the where the growth is going to be in 3.0, and if you're worried about corrections, then use hedged equity. U.S. real estate, same bifurcation is happening between the 2.0 and 3.0 areas, and you're seeing a big difference in market prices. In the high-cost states, you're going to want to watch out for what the impact is going to be on state and local deduction outcome or if they do anything with respect to the mortgage interest deduction. Anyway, but the one thing you don't want to do, and this relates to both real estate and equities, is you don't want to get squeezed out by not participating in the crash up. Bitcoin, it's hard to predict because this has nothing to do with economics or finance. It's pure politics. If you don't understand Bitcoin, I strongly recommend you listen to the interview I did with Harry Blaser called Bitcoin the Op, where we go into this in great detail. But if you want me to make a political call on this, I think the prices and market size have a significant amount of room to grow. At the same time, I'm staying out. I think the fraud and risks of buying it currently are not something I want to be bothered with. And now, if ETFs become available, the risk levels will go way down because you're depending on somebody else to be a trustworthy custodian. And so that could solve a lot of legal or tax problems. I still think there are major risks with helping finance the ultimate control system and prototype and innovate the ultimate control system. So, for reasons of karma, I'm going to stay away. The best investment continues to be in your health. You disintermediate all the corporations out of your life. So if there's anything you can do to reduce your overhead on a permanent basis, you know, whether it's investing in a well, investing in your own energy capacity, getting intermediaries out of your life and out of your assets is, to me, always a great investment. And obviously, anything you can do to invest in your business and your financial and intellectual independence is great, because all of those things radically reduce your risk in this environment. The fourth story is going to be the big issue, both domestically and globally, will be U.S. tax reform. It has very big implications for domestic markets. It has very big implications for global markets. Now, they're still banging out exactly, the Republicans are still banging out what they want to do, but that's going to be front and center because with this budget passing this week, you now have a situation where all it takes is 51 votes to make it happen in the Senate. So, and they clearly have the votes, I believe, in the House. So big implications globally and big implications domestically. Paul Ryan, House Speaker, said that the Republicans plan to have tax reform done by November 28th. That's very aggressive, but I give it an 80% chance of passing. And chances are increasing that there's going to be multiple efforts underway to organize Republicans in support of an administrative agenda. So it's definitely possible. The dollar and the economy are really too fragile to book any more opposition. The last year or all the squabbling since November 2016 has been very expensive globally to the American brand and very expensive to trying to get anything done. And if you look at a variety of different things that are happening politically, whether it's a tax on Hollywood, a tax on Silicon Valley, to a lesser extent, a tax on Wall Street, I think the message is the factions that want to return resources and rebuild in the United States are on the move, and they're on the move forcefully because they can't brook more childish politics. And the message basically is to the body politic, whether in the House, the Senate, or a variety of different political interests around the country, it's time to put your big boy pants on, and if you won't, we'll force you into it. So think of this as a behind-the-scenes deep state response to what it takes to keep the dollar dominant. And it's going to make the fourth quarter very interesting. We're going to be covering tax reform and regulatory reform if they try and get it in concert on Money and Markets throughout November. So it's a very short time period. Today's October 26th. So we literally have 32 days between now and when Paul Ryan's going to try and get this passed. And it's going to make for interesting times. So ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining me for the third quarter equity overview. I will be giving the last part of the third quarter wrap-up next week, Control 101. Very important and interesting discussion. I hope you will take the time to join me. The control systems are not just how we manipulate the financial markets or the financial system, because the financial system is just one piece of the control systems. And the layering on of controls are growing every day. And so it's extremely important to me that if you want to have a free and inspired life, that you have a good map of the control systems and know how to navigate the world without, you know, them catching you up, tripping you up, and wasting your time and your money. So with that, I look forward to talking to you next week with Control 101. And in the meantime, I wish you prosperity and good hunting.